I've been really surprised at how many people who listen to this podcast have reached out to me about having me speak at their events. I love that. And here's why. Over the last 13 years, I've had the honor to help hundreds of companies like Nissan, Walmart, Microsoft, and Comedy Central at events around the world. And during that time, I've developed three big goals for your event. Number one, I want to slingshot your audience into the best year they've ever had. Whether I'm opening, closing, or somewhere in the middle of the event, I want to launch everyone out of that room with actionable, memorable things that they can apply to their work and lives immediately. Number two, my second goal, I want the sound team engaged and laughing. The sound team has heard it all. They have. And if I can make them laugh and learn along the way, the audience is going to absolutely love the keynote. And number three, my third goal, I want you to get text messages during the keynote. My favorite sentence to hear from you after I speak is, "John, my phone was blowing up during your keynote." I'm there to make you look like a rock star, not me. If your boss texts you during my speech and compliments you on how well the event is going, then I know I've done my job. Whether it's virtual or live, 10,000 people in an arena, or 15 sales team members on WebEx or Zoom or Microsoft Teams, I'd love to help you with your next event. Fill out the quick form at acuff.me/speaking to check my availability. That's acuff, acuff.me/speaking. Hey everyone, and welcome to the All It Takes a Goal podcast. If you're new around here, I'm a late bloomer who discovered the power of goals in his mid-30s. Now I'm on a furious mission to create the accelerators I wish I had in my 20s. I'm your host, John Acuff, and today I'm joined by Dr. Josh Axe. Who's that? Well, I'm so glad you asked. Dr. Josh Axe, DCDNMCNS. Those are letters that mean degrees and doctory stuff, is a certified doctor of natural medicine and clinical nutritionist with a passion to help people use food, lifestyle, and mindset medicine to heal and prevent illness. He's a graduate of Johns Hopkins University, earning his Master's of Science in Organizational Leadership. In 2008, he started a functional medicine center here in Nashville, which is where I first connected with him. We've been friends for a while. He founded the website draxe.com, which is one of the top natural health websites in the world today. He has a fast-growing show and podcast, the Dr. Josh Axe Show. I've been on it. It's a blast. And he's got a brand new book coming out, which I think you are going to love. So, again, this is a buddy of mine. He lives what he talks about, which is one of the reasons I'm such a big fan of what he does. You're going to hear that in the interview. We go a ton of different places. He's got a wild story about having to teach himself to walk again and using mindset that way. We go into visualization and like, well, is that just like nonsense, woo-woo, kind of like if you dream something, a car will show up in your driveway. What does that mean in a practical, scientific manner? So you're going to love this episode. Let's jump in to my conversation with Dr. Josh Axe. Josh, I'm so excited you're joining me on the show, man. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always fun when it's a friend. And one of my favorite things about you, and I got to experience this because we live in the same town. I feel like by law, if you write the kind of books you and I write, you eventually move to Franklin, Tennessee. But I love that you live what you teach, like you walk the walk, as it were. And I know this because you and I went out to lunch, and where we went out to lunch also was like a health food store. So it was a mini grocery store. They also served delicious lunch. And while we were waiting in line, you went and grabbed a whole head of celery and a hummus container. And I was like, oh, are you getting groceries for later? And you were like, no, I like celery. And I loved that you did that because I'd eaten at that spot many times. I never saw someone go and be like, I'm just going to grab an entire head of celery and also eat that during lunch. So when I see somebody like you, that's like, yeah, your body matters, your health matters, you living it out is my favorite thing. I'm curious, what are some other things like that, that if I saw them, I'd go, whoa, this dude's really doing it. Like, what are little things you do to stay Josh Axe?
Well, you know, John, I mean, and I know you're this way too, right? If you're going to, go after goals, you've got to be very habits oriented. And so I'm very habits oriented. I'm very thoughtful about, you know, also the long term, like, what do I want to be doing when I'm 80 and 90 years old? And so I'm very conscious that we are what we eat. And so from starting first thing in the morning, you're going to see, I've got a lot of habits, mostly that are health related, personal growth related, spiritual growth related, that sort of thing. So I typically wake up first thing in the morning and start reading something to grow. It could be, you know, a spiritual book, could be a leadership book or a growth book like yours. And so I typically do that first thing in the morning and get grateful. And then I'll do a superfood smoothie. And so, you know, it takes me a while to make my superfood smoothie in the morning because I'm putting in 20 different things in there, everything from bone broth, protein, and collagen to royal jelly to a bunch of different super fruits to, I have companies because I own a supplement company. They're always sending me free innovative products. Like, we have this new product from pomegranates. They take this extract and ferment it. And so I add that in. So anyways, you would see it's sort of like I'm a mad scientist in the morning of making this, you know, superfood concoction. And so that's something that, I mean, literally the other morning it took me like 10 minutes because I got powders everywhere and made a big mess.
There's beakers. I feel like there's beakers involved. Like, you've got a lab coat on at this point.
Well, this morning I got a powder from this company and I'm like, how much is like 1.33 grams? And so I did actually get out it wasn't a beaker, but it was it was a teaspoon and I was weighing and measuring to make sure I wasn't overtaking what they'd sent me. So, to a degree, my kitchen is a lab.
So I'm curious, were you always goal oriented? Like, were you the kind of kid that, like, at nine, you were like, I want to read a certain number of books a year? Or is this something you grew into later in life? Because people don't casually go to John Hopkins University. So I'm assuming there was some intentionality, you know, early on in life. But what did that look like for you? When did you first bump into the power of goals?
You know, I would say, sometime in college, and I'll just kind of share you a story. And I think there's probably a good amount of people that would resonate with this because it maybe defines something that they've dealt with in their own life. But going all the way back to high school, when I was in freshman English class, I had a teacher ask me to stay afterwards. And she said, "Hey, Josh, what do you want to do after high school?" And I said, "Well, I want to be a doctor." And she actually laughed out loud at me, John. I mean, literally laughed out loud. She said, "Listen, with your GPA, you'll never get in. My daughter is a 3.8 GPA. She barely got into Ohio State Med School." She's like, "You'll be lucky to graduate." She said, "I wanted you to stay after because you failed this paper and you've got a D- in my class and you need to try harder." And I walked out of there as like a 14-year-old boy thinking, well, gosh, you know, a part of me, I had this first, it was the first time I ever thought in my head, well, maybe I'm not smart enough, or, you know, I knew I just had trouble in school. And then 2 weeks later, my mom brought me to a physician and he talked about me like I wasn't in the room. And he said, "Your son has severe ADHD. And then, not knowing a lot, again, as a kid, I thought, well, gosh, not only am I not smart, I'm like medically not smart. There's, you know, must be something.
Doctors have said I'm dumb.
Yes. And so then throughout high school, I felt like I wasn't smart. And so I really didn't try. Like, I barely graduated high school. The only reason I graduated, John, is because I knew my dad would be irate if I didn't graduate high school. So I graduated with a C- GPA, like a very low two point something. And I applied to colleges because I didn't want to go off to college. I didn't want to be the kid to just stay back or go to community college. And I got denied by most of these colleges, but one college sent me a letter and the letter said something like this. It said, "You're not in, but if you come and do summer school and take several classes and average above a 3.0, we'll let you in." This was the University of Kentucky. And so I said, okay, well, I want to go off to college. And so I went and did summer school. And the first class I had was English 101. And the first big assignment was a paper. And I said, okay, I'm going to try really hard because, again, I want to go to college. And I tried hard. And then a few days later, the teacher said, "Hey, Josh, hey, would you stay after class? Can I talk to you for a minute?" And I thought, oh no, this is deja vu all over again. And she said, "Hey, what's your major?" And I said, well, like a lot of kids, like I said, "I don't have a major." And she said, "Well, I think you should consider, if you don't have a major, being an English major or journalism major, because you did a great job on this paper. You got the highest grade in the class. And I think you could really be a great writer." And I said, "Thank you." And I walked out of the class. And John, it was one of the first times I think I ever had, and I had great parents, but I think someone outside of my parents telling me, "Hey, you're really good at something." And it's almost like I had this, I'll call it like a memory transplant or a mindset transplant. I mean, for 4 years, I thought I was stupid and not smart. And I didn't try much. And then after I had her tell me that, I thought, wow, like I can do this. And I think it was that moment too, where I became a little bit more goal oriented. I think I started realizing that what I believe matters, and I started thinking about myself differently. And so then soon after, my dad introduced me to some guys who were doctors of functional medicine, shared with me what they did, and I said, I want to do that. So I think the first time, by the way, going back to this, the reason why I told that first teacher in high school I wanted to be a doctor was the year prior, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. And I saw my mom go through chemotherapy and have a mastectomy and lose all her hair. And the thing I thought to myself was, I want to, there has to be a better way. And I want to help people like that. So if you want to know my first time I felt like I had these sort of goals was seeing my mom go through that trauma, I thought to myself, well, I want to be a doctor. So that was kind of my first goal I had thought about. And then that dream died for 4 years. And then it was sort of reawakened by a teacher in college. But I would say that was sort of the initiation, if I really look back, of what when I really started kind of having this sort of mentality of having this aim, having this finish line, having a goal.
Wow, that's an amazing story. And talk about the power of a teacher, the power of encouragement. And I love that you said you had a mindset, you know, shift or transplant, because that's what your new book is about. Your new book, Think This, Not That, is about mindset. What do you think caused you to write this now? You and I talk about books a lot. We talk, you own a ton of companies. You've got a million things going on, but you were deliberate to say, okay, I feel like what we need to talk about right now is mindset. Why do you think that's so important right now in 2024?
Yeah, well, let me jump back to something real quick, just so everybody can think about this for themselves. Like I mentioned this sort of organ transplant or mindset transplant. For me, it was that, like, I really consider those to be limiting beliefs, and I think most people have them. Like, it was like I had a new organ put in, and I think for a lot of people, they're one limiting belief away from their dream. Because here's the thing, if I would have held on to that limiting belief that I wasn't smart, I don't even think that I would have, later on in life, if I wasn't able to overcome that, I don't think I would have, you know, gone to Johns Hopkins later on and had a 3.9 GPA. I don't think I would have written several books or hit the Inc. 5000 list in business or any of those things. I don't say any of those to boast. I just say this is that, like, I was the kid who almost failed high school and then later on was able to do some things I'm really, really excited about. I think for a lot of people, they have limiting beliefs around things like, hey, I'm not pretty, or I'm not smart, or I'm not worthy, or hey, I don't have what it takes to make it. That person has something really special and I just don't have what that is. And so it's really important that we identify what are those limiting beliefs and we start moving forward with breaking through those things. Sorry, I went back to that. What was your question again? The second
My
one here?
My question was, why do you think mindset matters in 2024? Because again, there's 100 different topics you could have written about. This one was on purpose. Why does it matter right now?
Well, you know, I started thinking about this, and then I had something crazy happen in my life that really reinforced this. But I went back and thought about when I did run my functional medicine clinic, and I realized that the biggest thing that held patients back from seeing results typically wasn't their condition. It was typically their mindset. I'll give you an example of this. I mean, I would sit down with patients really early on, and I felt like I knew if they were going to see results pretty quickly based on their mentality about what I was sharing with them. So I tended to second appointment, sit down, start going over a nutritional plan with them. And I would say, okay, and they would fill out a diet diary. And so they might put down, I'm eating, you know, a bagel and cream cheese or frosted flakes with skim milk, whatever it is. And I would say, hey, let's do this instead. Let's do a collagen berry superfood shake, right? Let's do this. And I would typically get one of two reactions. One would be, that sounds great. You know, hey, and they really believe they were going to see this breakthrough. And there's another group saying, oh no, you're going to take this away from me. They really felt like they were being deprived. They went in this state of almost like mini depression that they couldn't continue to do everything they were still doing if they wanted to get well. And I could tell those people with that mindset of believing they were going to heal, believing they were going to get better, and they were taking action, I knew that they were going to see results. For the others, I knew they would have a very hard time. So I think there's that element of me realizing that that was, you know, that was the case with a lot of people. And then, so I had thought about, I've always been a big fan of leadership and personal growth, following people like yourself, John Maxwell, you know, Ed Mylett and others. And I, and so I had thought about writing this book. And then about a year and a half, a little over a year and a half ago, I had injured my back doing CrossFit, just doing something unwise. I knew better, and ended up herniating a couple discs in my back. Okay. And so I went and said, okay, I'm going to get a natural procedure done called stem cell. And where they go in and they take my own bone marrow, they inject it back in, and it just helps the area heal completely. And I had it done once before for an injury and healed it 100%. So I went in and they did the injection. And then a few, just even that day, something didn't feel right. After the next few weeks, I kept feeling worse and worse and worse. Finally, 3 months later, I woke up one morning and I couldn't walk.
And so like you couldn't feel your,
no, well,
when you say you
well,
couldn't walk,
well,
you couldn't well, feel your legs?
No,
or?
No, I could feel my legs. The pain was so bad in my disc that I couldn't even, and I had some nerve pain going down my leg, but I couldn't even hardly roll in bed. Like I couldn't put any weight even upright because the pain in my back was so bad. So if anybody has like blown a disc, you know, it was that sort of pain. My muscles were seizing and spasming. And so we had to have an ambulance come because I needed to get an MRI. And you can imagine it's so hard. I've got a 3-year-old and she's crying and upset and we don't know what's going on. And so I go in and get an MRI and they let me know. They say, hey, we think you have a spinal infection that looks like you have osteomyelitis in your bone, which imagine you have an infection in your skin, like a big yellow kind of, well, imagine that that's in the bone and by the spinal cord. So it was really serious. And I was in Puerto Rico at the time. So then I had to take a medical plane to Florida.
Those are pretty cheap, right?
Well, honestly, it's the most expensive thing I've ever had. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. So anyways,
was not an easy trip.
No. But again, it's one of these things where it's like, it's my spinal cord. It's my butt spine. So flew, met with an infectious disease doctor. And he told me, he said, hey, here's your prognosis. He said, and here's where this was his exact words, you know, best case scenario, you live with permanent pain and you're the first person to know when bad weather comes through. And he said, in the worst case scenario is you're going to be permanently disabled. And for me, John, you know me, like I'm at the gym every day. I mean, I've hardly missed a workout since I was 5 years old. And so always very into health and fitness. And to have a doctor tell you, you think you're just fine. I had a little back injury, but it was healing. And to go from that to could be permanently disabled, it was incredibly hard. In fact, I had 24 hours where there were emotions I had never experienced before that I experienced. I mean, despair. I didn't really know what despair felt like. And I felt that. I felt hopelessness.
Gosh.
And thinking, wow, the best case scenario this doctor's saying is that I'm going to have pain every day the rest of my life. And then
how old were you when this happened?
This was 2 years ago, a little less than 2 years ago. So this was recently.
Yeah. So were you like, how old are you now?
I was 40 years old.
Okay. 40, man.
Yeah. And one of the things is I was going down this rabbit hole, I had to stop myself. And it was a level of a spiritual moment too, of just saying, you know what, this is, this mindset, this belief that I'm having, this is not serving me. This is not helping me. And I knew there's something in medicine called neuroplasticity. And it's where, you know, the mind can help heal the body. The spirit can help heal the body because you actually create new neural pathways for your body to repair itself. Your body, your brain can tell your body to send stem cells to repair itself. And there's some really amazing research and scientific literature behind this. But I started realizing that, you know what? If I believed I wasn't going to heal, the likelihood of me healing wasn't going to be well, versus if I believed and knew I was going to heal, I likely would. And a lot of this goes back to something called the placebo effect and nocebo effect. The placebo, we know, started off during, you know, one of the first world wars, where there was a doctor who ran out of morphine with people who, with these soldiers who had these debilitating injuries, even losing limbs. And he just gave them a sugar pill because he ran out of morphine. And he found that some of them literally saw the same level of pain decrease as those who were actually getting the morphine. And that's where the placebo effect came from. Well, there's also studies, and these are individual case studies showing, this is a real case study where a man went in and was told he had liver cancer and that he had 3 months to live, and he died 3 months later. And when they went to the autopsy, they realized they misdiagnosed him. He only had a benign tumor on the side of his liver that could have removed, and he could have lived for another 30, 40 years. And so the reality is the power of our mind is incredible in terms of life or death. And so I knew that. And I started saying, okay, what do I need to do to start walking again? Because by the way, I didn't walk for almost a full year. It was 10 full months, plus being on a walker for a couple months. And so
how far into the process do you start where you kind of not turn a corner, but when you start having these conversations with yourself, and what does that look like? Is it you're laying in bed, you've got a notepad and you're like, this isn't serving me, I got to change something? How far into the year does that happen?
Well, for me, I think I just kept feeling worse and worse for 3 months. And I thought, okay, I'm eventually going to turn the corner. And I'm just not doing the right treatment on myself, or maybe I re-aggravated something. And so I think, you know, it was the moment that the doctor gave me this negative diagnosis. And I think when I pictured myself, crippled or disabled in the future, or just worse than I was then. And I think that's the moment where, you know, you're in darkness, you're despair. And I think I started, now listen, I think any time is the best. I think the sooner the better, I think is my answer, is the best time. But I think for me, it was this point of like almost a rock bottom, and just realizing this isn't going to be the best path forward. So what I started doing, John, is I started writing, what do I want to be doing 1 year from now? And the thing I was doing months previous was taking my, at the time, 2.5-year-old and throwing her up in the air in the pool. And so I said, I want to be doing that a year from now. And then I was actually scheduled to officiate my sister-in-law's wedding, and I wanted to go and do that. And I wanted to get back to doing triathlons like I'd done, and running and biking and swimming. So I said, I want to actually get better than I was before. So I spent time visualizing that. And this is one of the things I get to in the book. I call it visualization to realization, is I really pictured myself in that place. And then there's actually a study that shows you can amplify the placebo effect. One is visualization and knowing this is exactly how I want this situation to turn out. Number two is tying a lot of emotions to it, because emotions actually help drive a lot of what happens physiologically within your system. For instance, laughter. I mean, we've heard this before, right? Laughter is the best medicine. It really is. There's studies showing if you laugh, it actually will help heal your digestive system and other, in depression and a number of other illnesses. So I started picturing myself with joy, with excitement, and experiencing that with my daughter. And then number three is have a plan, have a goal and a plan with that. That's also part of experiencing greater results with the placebo effect. And so I started planning out, if I am going to see my best results and in 1 year be able to officiate this wedding, be able to throw my daughter in the air, what do I have to do? So I ate pretty much just meat and vegetables for a year. And during that time, I also got in something called a hyperbaric chamber for about, you know, an hour or so a day. And then I started doing vitamins and supplements, everything you can imagine. And I did get on, by the way, I hadn't taken a medication since high school. Literally, maybe one time I had to take something for a procedure, but generally I hadn't taken anything. And so I had to get on IV antibiotics. They typically recommend it for 12 months. I was able to take them for just 4 weeks. I'm sorry, 12 weeks. I was able to take it for 4 weeks and cut down on that. But I also wanted to protect my body during that time. All that being said, so I had a plan and I followed it to a T for a year. And I got to the point, John, and I'll say this now, like actually this time last year, I was not walking. Okay. It was about a couple months after this. And I got to the point where right now I'm back lifting weights. I don't have pain every day. I can't quite throw my daughter in the air. I'm probably about 70% better. I think by the end of this year, I'll be back to 100%. But again, I'm already better than the doctor told me I would be. And I'm going to get back to 100%. So all that being said, and the process I go through, I call it visualization or realization. You visualize, then you strategize. And then and that's sort of laying out what's the exact plan. And then I systematize in terms of my habits and my schedule. So I schedule what to do every day and then I'll realize the results. But that's some of the process I went through in healing.
Now, I'm curious, why did you pick a year? Because I think some people, where they get stuck is they want the results faster and they come up with a shorter time frame that's unrealistic and dooms them from the start. How did you know to have a year as a time frame?
You know what? I think a year is I just would say through experience. The way that we do our company goals too, I think this ties a little bit into businesses. We do quarterly sprints and then we do yearly goals. And so these quarterlies, it's like, okay, I want to see where I am in a month. And also I think it was more encouraging that way because I noticed like with the sort of issue I had, it doesn't heal very fast. But it does heal, but it doesn't heal very fast. And so I knew that if I was sitting there like somebody's checking their weight every day, it just wasn't going to serve me. It wasn't going to put me in the best mindset versus if I would compare where I was 3 months ago to where I am now, it was going to be much more encouraging. So I really had more of these quarterly thoughts. This is the way we've done our business, and more of these, and then the yearly goal. But for me, I would say more than anything, it was sort of the business experience and life experience that caused me to set a longer goal. Because I think you're right. A lot of times the short term, if you don't hit the goal immediately, people quit versus if you know, hey, I'm playing the long game here, I think you're more likely to stick with it.
When you do visualization, what does that process look like for you? Are you journaling? Are you making a list of the things you want to feel so you can be specific about the emotions? Are you getting photos? That I would say one of the things I like about your approach is it's specific and practical, where I think a lot of people walk away from the idea of visualization because it's been so kind of woo-wooed where it's like, if you think it, a car will show up in your driveway by magic from the universe. Yours is much more, okay, I'm a doctor, I'm practical, here's what I do. Walk me through some of the practical steps you do.
Yeah, well, there's this term that's used, again, you use the word woo-woo, you know, manifesting. It's like, hey, if I just dream it, the car will show up in my driveway. And I'm a lot more, I would say, faith plus science driven with my approach to visualization. You know, I've studied visualization a lot because I think it's important for healing. As I mentioned, neuroplasticity, I mean, it's a big part of even in the scientific studies of creating that sort of reality or your best future outcome. And so, you know, and I write about athletes with this. You know, Jack Nicklaus is a famous golfer. He was my grandfather's favorite golfer. And he said he never took a single shot without picturing the ball going into the hole. So he visualized every single shot he ever took, and he was the greatest golfer of all time. I had the honor of working with some Olympic level athletes, including the Olympic swimming team as a physician, really helping them more with nutrition and some of those things and recovery. But I remember Michael Phelps, and he was interviewed, and they said, hey, because he would, if people remember this, the Olympics, he would have this hood over his head and he'd just be staring off. And somebody asked him, hey, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm visualizing. I said, oh, you're visualizing yourself on the podium winning? He said, I'm visualizing every stroke, every turn, every single part of the race. And so I thought that was really interesting too. So we look at the best athletes in the world. We look, even again, we could talk about things spiritually, God telling Abraham, look at the stars in the sky, or even in business. I think there are elements of that. So I do think that their visualization for me has been very, very helpful, because I think it's hard to, like I used to do triathlons, and if I didn't know where the finish line was, it's like, how do you finish the race? How do you win the race if you don't know where the finish line is? So that's part of me with visualization. And so what I'll do is picture something that I really want to happen. Now, by the way, I think there's a step before visualization that most people should follow, and that is prioritization. Because if you achieve something that really is going to not lead to fulfillment and significance and a meaningful life, you're wasting your time. And so I think that you really want to make sure, like for myself, it's faith, it's family, it's my life work, it's my health. And so I make sure it aligns there before I actually do even visualize, but I visualize it. And then what I'll do, John, is I'll write it down, and I write it not with a pen. I tend to use my laptop, and I'll open a Word doc. And I do this every single year, by the way. So I have it labeled 2024 goals or visions. And so I'll type that out, and then I'll.
When
write.
Do you do that? Are you doing that? You're 2024. Are you doing that in like December, November?
Yeah, it's December. Okay. But I will say I am an obsessive goal setter and strategizer.
Yeah, so, that's why we like each other.
Yeah. So I mean, my answer is every time I'm on an airplane, I somehow open that document. And so I definitely do it quarterly as well. But really, almost once a month, I'm in there, and I might change or tweak things a little bit sometimes based on, you know, where I'm at or kind of new realizations. But I am constantly making some tweaks there. But I'll set out the goals, and then I'll write down the strategy in order to achieve that. So just to give you an example, I knew in order to heal, I needed to starve my body of, I needed to get it more oxygen. I needed to get more blood flow to the area. I needed to take herbs and certain things that are natural antibiotics. And so I wrote down all those things I needed to do. And I just plugged in my schedule. I'm going to take these supplements in the morning. I'm going to do this hyperbaric chamber in the afternoon. I'm going to do this physical therapy in the pool from this such and such a time of day. And so I was really specific. And then I do, you know, not everybody does this, but I do like to, I go to Google Images or DuckDuckGo Images or whatever it is. And I pull up a picture that may exemplify something. And sometimes I put that up on a cork board and I do that. Sure. But more practically, I just have it on my, I have it written in a Word doc that I look at on a regular basis. I mean, that's really the way that I tend to do it. And, but I also really put the strategy down because I think that's something else. I think that's something a lot of people are missing. John, I think a lot of people write, you know, first off, actually, it's not even a lot of people. You know, probably the studies of this better than I do. But a lot of people do goal set mentally, but they don't write it down. So the next step is writing it down. But I also think there is a study I read on, it was called the strategic mindset. And in the study, they went through the importance of achieving a goal, also having a strategy in order to achieve that goal. And of course, the chances of you achieving it go up dramatically if you lay out a strategy and a plan in order to do it. So I think that's probably, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. I mean, what percentage of people do you think either have a goal, write a goal, but also write down the strategic plan and plug it into their schedule?
Well, I mean, it's a funnel that gets smaller and smaller with each step. So I think you're right. A lot of people have dreams that, you know, or aspirations or wishes or whatever. And then you go, how many people write them down? That's a smaller percent. And then you go, how many people then turn it into actions? That's a smaller percent. How many people schedule the actions on their calendar? Smaller. How many people actually do them? Even smaller, which makes me curious about your approach to systems. You've used that word a few times today. What does a system look like for you? Or what are the core pieces of a system? If somebody said to you, okay, Josh, I want to change some part of my life. I want to, whether it's mindset, it's health, whatever. What are some of the kind of common parts of a system that you feel like helps turn it into something that's repeatable?
Yeah. So, well, let me share with this book. By the way, I've done, there's a few times you've asked questions. I got off track and didn't answer them. But with writing, so let me give you an example with writing a book. Okay, which I wrote this book. The reason why I wrote this book was I realized that food is medicine is powerful. Mindset medicine is even more powerful. If people want to heal, if people want to grow in their career, if people want to become a better leader, any of those things, your mindset is critically important. And I realized that I wanted to write a book on something that allowed me to experience a breakthrough in my health and in my life and in my business. And so I really cover that in the book in a deep way. And part of that, again, later on the book as I get into these systems. But, you know, this is something I first heard John Maxwell talk about. And you've heard this, right? John had his system for filing away. He had an actual physical filing cabinet. And Gabe Lyons, a mutual friend of ours, when I was talking to Gabe, he goes, you know, because Rebecca, his wife, did this for him. She said, no, even like today, he doesn't have it on the computer. He still has these physical filing cabinets that he uses. So it's kind of funny, but what I started doing is realizing, okay, if I'm going to write a book, well, what's the best system for me writing a great book? And so I realized that it is continually throughout the entire year, sometimes years in advance, filing away great stories, great quotes, great ideas. And so I already have a document, for instance, for a next book, I haven't even started writing yet. I have a Word doc going with an outline. And I have sections in there because I tend to break it down into stories, science, and then ideas and quotes by well-known people. And so I have those in there. And then I have something on my social media, which I don't spend a lot of time on social media, but for business, I'm on there pretty frequently. And so on Instagram, for instance, if I'm on there, I follow, the only accounts I really follow are leadership or spiritual or personal growth or health. But I follow those accounts and then I'll start saving quotes in there. Like I like a lot of the Stoics, like Marcus Aurelius, a lot of the famous saints like St. Francis of Assisi or Thomas Aquinas. So I will save those quotes in a folder or those stories or those the scientific studies on my Instagram. And then I'll pull those over eventually, put them into a Word doc. And so then I just start building out years in advance. I have all of this content to work with when I write my next book. And then when I work with my writer, I will do the outline in really, really great detail. And in my outline, what I try and do is open with a personal story. And then I go into how this is really relevant to the people. And then I build the problem. Here's why this is an issue. And then I get into the science behind it. and some of the basic principles. And then I'll go through several solutions, and then I'll go through a call to action. So I know that that's the sort of content that I'm going to start building into that first chapter of that book. And then I'll work with a writer, and she'll transcribe what I say and get some of that down and do some of the editing. But really, so anyways, to answer your question, is that's the sort of system I'm talking about is really, you know, and it could be another system. For instance, if you want to run, you know, your first half marathon, you know, I think the system there is you run 4 days a week and you have a long run day where you're trying to increase your mileage. You have a speed day where you're trying to increase your speed. You also know nutritionally that you're going to try and eat mostly, you know, a lot of protein, a lot of fruits and a lot of vegetables. And so you have that down, and that's part of the strategy there as well. So there's a couple different strategies, but that's kind of the way that I think about it.
So you look for pieces that are important to the system. You look for the actions that are important to the system. You schedule them. It sounds like you tweak a lot too. I think that's what's interesting about your process is that I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that they have to have their goals formalized and done for the year by December 31st, and then they won't touch them again, and they never get to learn from each month. And I love that you said, well, there's new realizations, there's things that I, you know, need to change or tweak. I think that's a really wise approach to goals. I can see that working well with you. It's interesting you mentioned you don't spend a lot of time on social media. What do you do with distractions? Like, how does a guy like you deal with, you know, we live in a very distracted world, and you talk about a year out, a year from now, it'll only be more distracted. How are you in your life, your personal day to day, deliberate about dealing with distractions?
Yeah, well, I mean, one is a system, and it's called time boxing. I mean, I try and do my, you know, I try not to go from one thing to the next to the next. I mean, I try and time block in half days. Now, not everybody's work maybe allows them to do this, but I think that everyone can at least improve on this. So, for instance, my mornings are really content mornings. And so first thing I do, as I mentioned, I'm focused on winning the morning, winning the day. So I'm growing spiritually, growing physically, spending a little time with the family. And at 9 a.m., I'm starting work. And so from 9 to noon, I'm prepping content. And then I typically will film for the last hour in the morning from 11 to noon. And then during lunch, I may see the family and eat because I work from home mostly. And then in the afternoon is when I'll tend to do my meetings and interviews and those sort of things. And so I tend to block out my time in that way. And then also really block in the family time. And so I think I try not to cross those lines where, you know, constantly checking email. I mean, it's such a dopamine hit. It's just so easy to just get pulled into those things, but having a habit, like putting your phone on silence and putting it away is incredibly beneficial. And even, you know, I do even try and consciously, like when I'm with my daughters, I try not to be on the phone at all, you know, the best I possibly can. And so I almost see it as work. Now listen, I enjoy getting on there and scrolling, and seeing some of the great posts and seeing friends, you know, share what's going on in their lives and rooting for people like, you know, with you or Donald Miller or Michael Hyatt or somebody we know who's doing a book launch. But I like to, I like to be able to scroll on there. But the best thing I say, I don't have to say it except for it's just a form of discipline. I'm a really purpose-driven person, as you are. Like, I think for myself, I had somebody when I was in bed and, again, couldn't walk for so long. I had a friend stop by and he said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I said, "I'm writing my book." And he said, "Well, what else are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm taking these courses and I'm, you know, I was doing a lot of productive stuff." And he said, "Gosh, if I were you, I would just be eating Cheetos and drinking Mountain Dew all day." And I said, "Well, you know, I think for me, I'm just incredibly purpose driven. Like, I want to get to the end of my life and say I ran the best race. Like, I want to get to the end of my life and not have wasted it." And so I think I'm also really conscious. There's this quote by C.S. Lewis that I love, and you've probably heard it, but he says, you know, the people that thought most about the next life are the people that did the most in this life, essentially, to sum it up.
That's good. That's good.
And so for me, I'm very much long term. And when we read the studies on this, by the way, and this is something a lot of psychologists will share, the people that are most successful in life have this thing in common. They are long-term thinkers. They're long-term goal setters. And so, you know, we've all heard the marshmallow study, but basically it's where if you have kids in a room and you say, "Hey, you can have one marshmallow now, or if you wait 10 minutes, you get two marshmallows." Well, you know, it shows long term that those kids that waited for the marshmallows, the ones that can delay immediate gratification, they're the most successful. And this is true across the board. Almost everyone that I've ever met that's successful, that is one key thing that they're very good at. They're good at being able to say, I'm going to get the work down. I'm going to work now and play later. I mean, across the board.
Yeah, that's a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So I'm curious, the flip side of that, because you and I are similar in this sense. How do you know when you've gone too far? So like I've had conversations with my wife where she's needed to be like, hey, like we're just hanging out. We don't need to track the time of this hangout, or we don't need to accomplish a goal in this conversation. We're just getting like, you don't need to take notes or have a, you know, be intentional about like, you don't have to always be on. When do you know when you've kind of gone into that? And I heard somebody once say it's the difference between doable hard and destructive hard. Doable hard's great, and we need to be engaged that way. Destructive hard, which you see a lot of leaders get into. How do you know when you've gone, taken some steps in that direction? And then what do you do to pull back?
Well, one, this is a great question. If my wife was listening, she'd say, Josh is okay at it, but he needs to get better. So anyways, all that being said, you know, it's so, you know, one is, and this is something else I get into the book as well, by the way, it's awareness. And when I look at the people that are in the top 1% in an area of life, right? Like if I think about, if I want to grow spiritually, I'm really going to focus on a modeling, you know, somebody like just for that more recently past couple thousand years, let's say, St. Francis of Assisi or Mother Teresa, or there's this guy I follow, Anthony Mello, and lots of others.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things you'll notice with rabbis or pastors or priests is it's hard to rattle them. They have this almost spiritual calmness to them. And that's because they're very aware. They're aware of self. They're aware of others. Like they become very aware. It's something psychologists tend to develop over time and counselors, but it's a high level of awareness. And I notice the same thing, John, when I have people that are very healthy, they become very aware of their own physiology of, hey, this food I do well with, this one I don't do well of, hey, I should kind of stop eating the cake right now. I realize I'm in kind of emotional eating cycle. So they have a high level of awareness. And so I would say the same thing for me. When I am continually, part of personal growth is emotional intelligence. We know ourselves, we know others, we understand the patterns and principles of the world. And so when we're highly aware, I think that we're better able to pull ourselves in and out of going from structure to chaos, because you want a little chaos, you want a little adventure, you want a little excitement in life, right? So you want to have some guardrails and a plan, but you also want a level of flexibility there. And so for me, when I think about when I'm doing the best, it's when I'm operating in a high level of awareness and just being aware of, okay, right now, I need to not have guardrails up. Like we need to have more adventure and fun and excitement. I need to be able to push that interview 30 minutes or whatever it is. And so I don't know if that's an ideal answer, but just to say, I think that I operate the best when I've spent time cultivating awareness, which for me tends to be when I'm in a more prayerful meditation, spiritual growth, leadership, personal growth mode, when I'm becoming more of that. And when I'm not overworking. But I would say that I think for myself, it's that cultivating of awareness. By the way, there's a great study I get into in the book, just mention this quickly. And it's really tied to identity. And it's probably the greatest name of a study of all time, a psychology study. It's called the Batman Effect, or the Batman Study.
That's great.
And so they took these kids and they put them in three groups, and they wanted to see which kids would be most successful doing the short-term project, which was, I think, building something. And then as soon as they wanted to or felt like it, they could then go and play other games. But they had three groups. In the first group, these were kids that were 6 years old and 8 years old. And they went in, the first group, and they just said, hey, Johnny, just do your best on building that building. Okay, he went in and did it for a period of time. The next group, though, they helped the kids become more self-aware. It was called practicing self-distancing. And they say, Johnny, we want you to go in and think about yourself and asking yourself, are you doing your best? Okay. And so Johnny went in and did it. And he saw it was like a 13 to 16% improvement in productivity by helping the child self-distance and become more self-aware. And then they had the group come in and they said, hey, to these kids. They said, who is your favorite superhero? And so the girl said things like Princess Jasmine. And one of the boys said, I'm Batman. Okay. And so go in and do this. And they saw another 10 to 13% improvement upon who they even thought they were. And I think it's a really telling study in terms of, like, for a lot of people, their own identity and who they believe they are versus if they believe that they were someone else, like Batman, like Superman, like, you know, Princess Elsa or whatever it is. And so all that being said, I think self-awareness is so crucial to someone growing, because what goal setting is saying, here's where I want to end up. Self-awareness is, here's where I'm at right now. And it's really hard to get to the finish line if you don't even know where your starting point is. And so to me, that's a big part of self-awareness. And so I found that I'm the best in life in achieving those goals of a great family life, great career, great business, great health, when I'm both self-aware and I'm goal-aware.
I think that's a fantastic way to summarize it. Self-aware and goal-aware. Last two questions, Josh, and these are easy ones, and I ask them of everybody. First one, what's on your Mount Rushmore of books? Like, if you had to say, like, hey, here's four books that I recommend, or another way to think about it, because sometimes if people aren't sitting next to a bookshelf with their favorite books, it's hard to call them to mind. What's the book you've given away more than any other than your own? Because as an author, we've all given our books away, but you know, what's a book you've given away a lot, or what would you say, here's on my Mount Rushmore, if I was going to suggest people read these?
Wow. Well, one is going to be really a basic leadership book that I love, but it's John Maxwell's 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. I mean, to me, that was such a book that impacted me in such a big way. You know, Tony Robbins' Awaken the Giant Within, it's a big book, but it is a fantastic book for growth. There's a spiritual book I love, and I actually gave it away a lot. And there's a couple of those, but and David Perceived He Was King. It's by Dale Mass. It's really about identity and our identity. It's part of it is tied into the story of King David. And so I love that book.
So it's when David perceived he was king.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that one.
It's a great book. Let me say this. It's not the most well-written book, but it's full of gold. It's just like gold nuggets. It's full of gold.
Dude, there's
nuggets.
Some books like that where I'll read them and like it will have sold a million copies and I'll go, this book is so terribly written.
Yes.
But there's enough in there that you go, and it's often self-published. Like there's a couple of those that are like motivational and the title is dumb and the whole thing, and they like often they have illustrations in it and you're like, these are terrible.
Oh, yeah.
But then you read it and you're like, nah, this is making me fired up. Like I could run through a wall. Let's go.
That's
so funny, dude. That's so funny.
And number four would be, listen, I think sometimes reading for enjoyment, and I am a massive, massive J.R.R. Tolkien fan. I'm also a big C.S. Lewis fan, but J.R.R. Tolkien, Lord of the Rings, to me, is my favorite book I've ever read, just enjoyed, you know, helped improve my creativity and imagination.
Sure.
I think when you really understand the sort of psychology and the sort of deepness of the characters, it's really amazing. So I would say that's up there as well. And John, you probably don't have a lot of your guests do this. Can I tell you one more story? I think that I think is just super impactful for people.
Of course. Totally.
Cause you had asked me, we started off talking about goal setting pretty early on. And I want to share something that really shifted my mindset around the way that I set goals. And it was at my grandfather's funeral. My grandfather was a World War II veteran in the Navy. He lived to be 96 years old. And he worked at this company, Bell Telephone, until he was in his 40s. And at 40s, him and my grandmother took their life savings and invested and bought a lake and a campground and turned it into the swim park for families to do retreats and that sort of thing. And so just amazing man. And I was at his funeral. And there was a time in a funeral that most people know where the pastor says, does anyone have any final words about my grandfather's name was Howard. So he said, does anyone have any final words about Howard? And there was a man next to me. It's one of my uncles. And he just screams out and he's in his 70s and just starts bawling. He goes, Howard was my best friend. And what's so funny is I looked over at him and I feel a little guilty about this, but it was only a split second. But I thought to myself, well, I should have had compassion first, but I said, internally, I thought, well, you're not my grandfather's best friend, because I knew who my grandfather's best friends were. And I didn't think this guy would, you know, hung out with him very often. But then I realized something. I thought, you know what? My grandfather probably was this person's best friend. And I thought there were hundreds of people in the room. I thought my grandfather was probably half the people in this room thought my grandfather was their best friend. And he was an incredibly loving man. He was the sort of man, if you imagine a 96-year-old walking up to you, putting his, you know, weathered hand on your shoulder and saying, how can I pray for you? Or can I give you money? I mean, people during this funeral were saying things like, Howard saved my marriage. He gave me money when I didn't have anything. He saved my life. I mean, just incredible stories. I remember when I was younger, I used to go to the hospital with him. He would volunteer at church and we would go and he would pray for people, bring them their favorite meal, just talk to them on a weekly basis. And just an amazing man. And so I was sitting there and I was thinking about this idea, because I think I was very tied to goals and accomplishments at the time. And so I thought about, okay, I want to write a New York Times bestselling book and I want to make a certain amount of money. And something, when I was sitting there, I had this thought of like, what is success? And I thought, this is success. You know, you're at the end of your life and you have impacted so many people in a positive way. And so, and I get in this in chapter 2 of my book, but really going from an accomplishing mindset to a becoming mindset. We want to accomplish things, but we want to become a certain type of person first. I remember I used to also be a huge Lance Armstrong fan. And Lance Armstrong, you know, when I found out he was doping and he had this mindset of win at all costs, even costing his character, it really, I felt betrayed at the time. And I thought about what is that mindset he was developing. It was accomplish and win at all costs. It wasn't about who you were becoming. And so after my grandfather's funeral, I think I sort of redefined success for myself is I'm not only going to have accomplishing goals, I'm going to have becoming goals. I'm not only going to have a to-do list, I'm going to have a to-be list. And thinking about, okay, I want to be like my grandfather. I want to be wise. I want to be generous. I want to be compassionate. I want to have courage. And how can I live that out today as one of my goals? How can I grow in these things this year as part of the goals I'm setting on a regular basis? And I think for a lot of people, again, I think we should try and accomplish things. But, you know, there's this, of course, there's a scripture like this that says, what good is gaining the world but losing your soul? Or I remember reading about Steve Jobs, you know, basically having a terrible relationship with his kids. What great is building a company but losing your family, right? And so I became very, very aware of becoming and growing into a certain type of person. And that's what I go through in this book is really here are 12 mind shifts. Here's how to overcome limiting beliefs. But here's how to become a higher level type of person and having those limiting goals. So I did want to mention that. I felt like I needed to say that because I think, again, goals are so important. And I think we should try and accomplish our career goals and our financial goals and health goals. But also, I think goals really should be a part of them should be tied into who we're becoming in our character and our unique gifts and skills and taking those to a higher level as well.
Well, I think for that reason and many more, people are going to love the book, which brings me to my last question. Where can people find the book, find out more about you, give us all the links? I was on your podcast. You've got a great podcast. So where can people find this book?
Well, first I would say, you can get the book on Amazon or bookstores nationwide. Now, I do want to mention, if you get the book, I have one of the things I created is a lot of things to accompany the book to help you grow. So I've created a mindset masterclass. I have a workbook, a digital workbook you can download. I have something called virtue cards. We've got bonus interviews with Donald Miller and Dave Ramsey and some other amazing people that are part of it as well. And so if you go get the book and you go to joshaxe.com, joshaxe.com, and just plug in the code you get when you order on Amazon, you're going to get hundreds of dollars worth of free bonuses, a lot of free interviews and things like that. And so if you'd get it in the next few weeks, you can go again, joshaxe.com, you know, get the book and you'll get all those bonuses. But really buy it anywhere. And also, yeah, listen to my podcast. It's called the Dr. Josh Axe Show. I had John on. Super popular. By the way, we did a video on YouTube and you were just, again, so much gold, so much wisdom. And so you could also go to YouTube and watch and just look up, you know, Josh Axe, John Acuff and watch the interview I did with John because it was absolutely awesome and fantastic. But I would say, yeah, the podcast and get the book and then also at Dr. Josh Axe on social channels. But John, well, thanks so much for having me on. I'm obviously really excited the book, but also just super, super excited to share some of these thoughts. These are things that have changed my life and really helped take my life to a whole new level of meaning. And so thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And it's a fantastic story. I mean, there's not a lot of stories that start with, I couldn't walk, I needed to change my mind to figure out how. I mean, that's an amazing story. And again, as I started the interview, Josh is a guy who lives what he talks about. They always say don't meet your heroes, because you don't want to find out the guy who wrote a book on grace is mean backstage. But I can 100% say, as somebody who's friends with Josh and lives in his town, that Josh is the real deal. So Josh, thank you so much for doing this today, man.
Awesome. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you for listening to my interview with Dr. Josh Axe today. We'll put all the links in the show notes as always. And thank you for writing reviews. The reviews you write are so encouraging. So please keep those coming. Please follow, subscribe, whatever the kids are saying these days. And please write a review. I'll see you next week. And remember, all it takes is a goal.
Thanks for listening. To learn more about the All It Takes Is a Goal podcast and to get access to today's show notes and exclusive content from John Acuff, visit acuff.me/podcast. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of the All It Takes Is a Goal podcast.
I've been really surprised at how many people who listen to this podcast have reached out to me about having me speak at their events. I love that. And here's why. Over the last 13 years, I've had the honor to help hundreds of companies like Nissan, Walmart, Microsoft, and Comedy Central at events around the world. And during that time, I've developed three big goals for your event. Number one, I want to slingshot your audience into the best year they've ever had. Whether I'm opening, closing, or somewhere in the middle of the event, I want to launch everyone out of that room with actionable, memorable things that they can apply to their work and lives immediately. Number two, my second goal, I want the sound team engaged and laughing. The sound team has heard it all. They have. And if I can make them laugh and learn along the way, the audience is going to absolutely love the keynote. And number three, my third goal, I want you to get text messages during the keynote. My favorite sentence to hear from you after I speak is, "John, my phone was blowing up during your keynote." I'm there to make you look like a rock star, not me. If your boss texts you during my speech and compliments you on how well the event is going, then I know I've done my job. Whether it's virtual or live, 10,000 people in an arena, or 15 sales team members on WebEx or Zoom or Microsoft Teams, I'd love to help you with your next event. Fill out the quick form at acuff.me/speaking to check my availability. That's acuff, A-C-U-F-F.me/speaking.